This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Colostrum LD is clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function, eliminate harmful pathogens, and fight infection, as well as cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. To order, just go to sovereignlaboratories.com. That's sovereignlaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to sovereignlaboratories.com for Colostrum LD. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are once again. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Layla Mutin is our nutritionist in residence. She shares the podium with me on a weekly basis, where we answer questions from listeners that can be sent to us via email. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions, and we've got some really great questions lately, so yeah. We want to thank you for participating, and we hope that...
Do keep them coming.
Yeah, we've actually gotten some thank yous from people who answered questions for. People do listen and they do appreciate it. But before we get to questions, I just want to tackle something that I heard about recently. I was listening to NPR, and there was an interesting interview with a guy who has written a book that just came out this month. His new book is called The Omega Principle. Mm-hmm. Seafood and the Quest for a Long Life and a Healthier Planet by Paul Greenberg. So I read it, and it's on Fresh Air. Fresh Air is a, popular broadcast and podcast on NPR. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I found it aggravating because the more I listened, the more I got the impression that the guy took the position that of a skeptic about fish oil supplements, while on the other hand, endorsing the Omega Principle, which is the title of the book, is that, that there is really ample evidence for the beneficial effects of eating fish.
Okay.
But he kind of drew the line at the supplements. He says, there's a lot of hype in the industry, and besides, if you take the supplements, it's potentially harmful because they have mercury in them, and that's dangerous.
He has that backwards.
Yeah, right.
The supplements are going to be purified. They're going to be molecularly distilled.
And inspected. Yeah, right.
I would feel safer taking a fish oil supplement than eating seafood,
so,
quite frankly.
I got the impression he really doesn't know that much about the industry.
Yeah.
And I wish he'd done more of his homework about the industry and talked to more people in the industry, but it sounds like he kind of have a preconceived notion, which is like, you don't need...
Eat fish.
It's sort of like a Michael Pollan-esque view of things. It's like, what is his famous meme?
Eat well, mostly plants, not too much, something like that.
Yeah, and forget vitamins and supplements, because that's like a lot of hype. And so that's the kind of position that he took. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be a popular book. But, he says, and I'm reading from the NPR website, it says, author Paul Greenberg says, the harvesting of tiny fish for omega-3 supplements is having a ripple effect, leading to less healthy and bountiful oceans.
Hmm.
So he's worried about, they're using up all these wonderful fish for fish oil supplements when people could be eating the fish, and it's sort of taking on a sort of an eco-friendly view that somehow the industry is bad for the environment, and plus there's mercury in the fish, and blah, 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 blah. So in the fish oil.
In the fish oil.
The fish oil, but not the fish.
But it comes from the fish.
It comes from the fish. So this is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today's interview is about human health and the health of the oceans. My guest has written a book whose focus is omega-3 dietary supplements, capsules containing the fatty acids derived from fish and other sea life. He examines the claims the omega-3 industry makes about the health benefits of these supplements and what the latest research has to say. And you can read a transcript here. And, what I said is I said we have contacts in the industry, and
yes.
Carlson is one of our sponsors. They make fish oil. And I said, did you by any chance hear that interview? And do you have a reaction to it? And they said, oh, yeah, they're all over it. I was surprised. I said, they really indeed had a reaction to it. So I got a very, and I'll share this with you, from the technical service manager of Carlson. Now, look, obviously, they got a bias. They're for supplements. But here's what they say, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to kind of skim it. Mm-hmm. This is, I can't tackle this in depth personally, but I can share some quick thoughts. He discusses the reduction industry as a potential concern. That means you take the fish and you distill them down to the to the essence, the fish oil, the fatty acids. he says that where most fish oil comes from is from Peruvian anchovies, which are harvested in the Atlantic, the South Atlantic. And the Peruvian anchovy fishery, they say, is considered by many the model of sustainability worldwide. So these fisheries only harvest what the ecosystem can sustain. It's not rapacious farming. You know, we have like examples where certain fish have been fished into extinction. Mm-hmm. Every year's quota is adjusted accordingly. It's, you know, not the fault of the industry that the, you know, the oceans are being depleted. He also incorrectly says that the dietary supplement industry is unregulated by the FDA. He repeats that mantra, which is constantly repeated inaccurately by foes of nutritional supplements.
Yes.
The industry is really quite regulated by the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
Carlson, for example, just had a passing FDA inspection earlier this year. So
misinformation.
And they frequently reject ingredients or products not meeting their specifications.
Mm-hmm.
They even had a supply issue because they were carefully following FDA regulations, and they couldn't, you know, actually produce enough product because of this regulatory mandate from FDA. They say this regulatory discussion overall was frustratingly ignorant and rather incorrect in its scope and depth. I can tell that this author has done his homework on fishing and is quite knowledgeable overall about omega-3s, but he did make some technically misleading, incorrect statements that readily proves that his knowledge of regulations is lacking. Then he goes into the research. He says, well, the research really isn't that convincing about fish oil. So here's what the Carlson technical manager says. Tim Johannick is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Tim says, on the topic of research, he summarized the most recent studies as showing a lack of benefit overall. But this, too, is misleading. Most of the studies published in the time frame he looked at were review articles and meta-analyses.
Huh.
We've weighed in against these.
Yes.
These are easily manipulated to show what the author wants them to show, and they are not meant to be the final word on anything. And by the way, JAMA, which published these, has a long-held and well-known anti-supplement bias.
Yes.
He being the author of the book and the guy interviewed by NPR, essentially minimizes the positive studies by calling them association studies. But then uses the negative association studies to then support his inherent bias against supplements. You can't have it both ways.
No,
either the studies are strong enough to show causation or they are not. So in this case, both the positive and negative studies are too weak to show causation. The short answer is simply don't know enough to say how beneficial omega-3s are overall, but some benefits have been clearly shown. So this guy, the technical manager, is making a modest statement. He's not saying that there's some remarkable panacea, but he's saying, yeah, you know, the studies, you know, are, they need to be, we need to do more studies.
Mm-hmm.
So he says it's clear that he's not a researcher himself because he didn't catch this hypocrisy. Moving forward, the VITAL study is a study that can show actual causation at some level. It will be published later this year. However, I can tell you right now that that study used very low doses of omega-3s and is likely not to be capable of seeing all the potential benefits. It's equivalent of saying that we think a calorie reduction could result in weight loss, so let's cut daily calories by 50. The change in diet is not enough to impart a significant impact across the broad population.
Correct.
One thing he failed to mention entirely is that the FDA has now approved more than one fish oil as a prescription drug.
So how
can you have a fish oil as a prescription drug approved by the FDA for a specific health benefit?
Yeah.
And then say that fish oil is a fad. It's like, you know, people don't need to take that.
He did, and he wrote a book about it. How awful is that? Yeah. And are people buying this book?
It says, it's kind of hard to say that omega-3s aren't helpful when FDA is consistently approving fish oil-based drugs, isn't it? Mm. There is clearly plenty of research showing that fish oil is extremely beneficial. He also discussed how this year-long foray into fish consumption resulted in high mercury levels. He ate a lot. So he did this like experiment where he ate a pesco vegetarian diet, mm-hmm. just ate fish as his only source of animal protein. Mm-hmm. And he was alarmed at the end of it. He found that he had higher mercury levels in his blood. But duh
is right.
What was he eating? Sushi? Was he eating, you know,
exactly.
You know, was he eating shark, Chilean sea bass?
Yeah.
Was he, you know, duh, if
exactly.
you eat the wrong fish, you're going to have higher mercury levels.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So then he says, he tells people how to cook and eat salmon with the skin on. He says it's perfectly fine. But guess what? Most of the contaminants in salmon are in the skin.
Are in the skin.
So
yeah.
If you want to, you know, that's the layer where PCBs particularly are located.
Exactly.
So I generally, when you put salmon on a grill, generally the skin comes off easily.
Yeah.
You know, if you grill it skin down, you know, it sticks to the grill. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you like that, it makes like salmon bacon.
Salmon bacon is good.
Which is kind of good. It tastes good, but it is a residual of some toxins.
I think it's all right when you're using wild Alaskan salmon, but Scottish salmon, Norwegian salmon, all of this farm salmon.
Have more PCBs.
He didn't, they're more toxic.
By the way, I don't know if in his book he mentions this, but he didn't mention in his interviews. PCBs are more of a problem than mercury,
yes.
in my opinion.
And in salmon has virtually no mercury.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's really the PCBs.
Right.
So
I don't know. This book is going to sell a lot. It'll be very popular, but I don't know.
So I think people then will eat more seafood if you're going to follow Paul Greenberg's advice to eat more seafood and fill up with more mercury.
When was the last time you were invited on NPR?
Never.
You're a prominent nutritionist. I was never invited on NPR. Mm-hmm. You know why? Mm-hmm. Because we're pro supplements.
They have
an inherent bias against supplements.
Yes.
They do.
It's a
skeptical bias.
They do.
Much like New York Times and major media outlets. Somehow.
Thank you for bringing that up.
It's true.
Because that's a big one.
It is true.
And how often are we watching NBC News and ABC and CBS and every commercial is a drug ad?
Yeah.
Or something like that, you know?
So I was not exactly exhilarated by that thing. I was looking forward to it. I said, a book about omega-3. And then it pans supplements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, kudos to Carlson for their rebuttal, for their critique.
Quick response.
Of all of that.
And
we'll
send them an air check of this discussion. It was nice of them to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, sorry to delay our
getting into
questions.
But that was important just because something is in a book doesn't mean you should.
Well, it's going to be very authoritative. You know, it's getting a lot of good press.
Hmm.
I mean, good PR.
Well, that's also part of the agenda.
Yep.
That's also part of the machine to market all that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we've got an email from Jim. This is actually an excellent question, Dr. Hoffman. Many thanks for the terrific program and content. During my cancer treatment in 2014, I was prescribed an andro treatment to suppress the effects of serum testosterone. I soon became very depressed.
Mm-hmm. That's very much the case.
Yeah. At this time, I weighed 275 pounds. I'm 74 inches tall. That's 6'2". In response to increasingly serious depression, my primary care doctor prescribed a popular drug, Wellbutrin. The prescription was successful. The depression substantially passed within 90 days. Wonderful. The cancer treatment continued. After 18 months, I began the process of weaning off the Wellbutrin with my doctor's supervision, but then the weight had ballooned to 350 pounds from 275.
Okay, so pause for a moment here, because what's happening here is, you know, these are hormone blockers, and the idea is if you starve the prostate cancer, which is a hormonal cancer, of testosterone, it'll slow the progression of the cancer. They do the same thing with women with estrogen blockers like tamoxifen and anastrozole. Femara, it's called.
Yeah.
So, what they've discovered is that, this aggressive treatment sometimes, doesn't lead, it fights the cancer, but the outcome may be the same, which is men die at about the same rate. Why do they die? They die of cardiovascular disease and diabetes.
Yes. You need testosterone.
Right. And it slows you down.
To protect you.
You plump up. Mm-hmm. You become a butterball. You lose muscle mass.
Yeah.
And if you're not eating very carefully, which when we have patients on hormonal therapy, we put them on a very careful low-carb diet.
Yes.
Because you become very, very prone to diabetes when you block out your hormones.
Yeah.
And this is actually why in some of our male patients with diabetes, we give them testosterone. We give them testosterone to fight the diabetes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that fat depot in the abdomen is aromatizing.
Wellbutrin is thought to be one of the better ones in terms of...
For weight loss.
Right.
Meaning not causing weight gain.
Yeah.
Wellbutrin is probably the best one out there.
There you go.
So,
most antidepressants, almost all of them, and in a recent study, cause weight gain.
They do.
And I guess Wellbutrin
Cymbalta,
to some extent, too.
Effexor, Prozac.
Big time Cymbalta.
So, Jim successfully transitioned off the Wellbutrin. The cancer treatment's continued, but it's holding his PSA in the safe range. During the last 6 months, he says, I've lost 30 pounds following a low-carb diet and eliminating alcohol. Jim, you shouldn't have been drinking alcohol if you have cancer.
Right.
Okay.
Why is that? Because it's estrogenic.
It's estrogenic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a mitochondrial toxin. It's a poison.
Right, right.
And if you're getting chemo radiation, you don't want to add more to the toxic burden. Anyway, so Jim says, I blame the weight gain on the androtherapy, but now I'm beginning to wonder about the Wellbutrin.
Yeah, well, it could be. Different strokes for different folks. Some people may or may not get that effect from Wellbutrin, but virtually all the antidepressants cause that.
They can,
right?
Yeah. And the fact that he wasn't on a low-carb diet earlier and he was having alcohol doesn't help the matter. We don't know how old Jim is. I'm going to assume he's over 50, if this is about his prostate.
Well, alcohol does two things in terms of weight. It generally, it's caloric. It's a little bit caloric. But it's an insulin trigger, but it also stokes appetite.
It does.
Which is a major reason why the first thing you do in a restaurant, they sit you down and they say, would you like something to drink?
Yeah, to whet your appetite.
Yes, big time, because you relax and it whets your appetite, you order more food.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's the margin on alcohol is a lot greater than the margin on a filet mignon, you know.
Right.
You know, filet mignon, that $32 filet mignon, they make, you know, their cost might be, I don't know, $12 or something.
Yeah.
But with the drink, you know, when you have a glass of wine, that's a, you know, about a buck and a quarter a glass of wine that they charge $14 for.
Exactly. So really, they're charging the glass what they get for the bottle.
Yeah.
Wholesale.
Right.
Exactly. So Jim, I would recommend you stay on that low carb diet. Keep alcohol to an absolute minimum. That's probably one of the best things you could do. But it's interesting, you know, wondering about the Wellbutrin. In my experience, the Wellbutrin has been the least nasty antidepressant for weight gain.
Yeah.
So I've even seen patients whose doctors have switched them from something like Prozac or Paxil or Cymbalta, Effexor to Wellbutrin because they had suddenly started putting on weight.
Yeah, big recent study, though, said that virtually all the antidepressants cause weight gain.
Yeah, that's right. I think that was on Medscape or so. I think I saw that there.
So, well, it was on Intelligent Medicine, that much I know.
Yeah. By the way, antidepressants are also problematic. Not great for our bone mineral density. Some studies have shown that the use of antidepressants may increase the risk of breast cancer. That's all very interesting.
Yeah, I'm reading the official word on Wellbutrin is that Wellbutrin is distinguished from several other antidepressants which are often associated with weight gain. Studies have found that Wellbutrin, when combined with dietary recommendations, can result in significant weight loss, but not always.
Not always. That's true. Jim, best of luck to you. We hope you feel better.
And of course, just need we say that all that extra fat is associated with a poor prognosis.
Yes.
In prostate cancer.
Exactly.
At this point, let's pause because we generally allow our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you. So here goes, listen up.
Did you know the benefits of nature's most powerful superfood are universal and always available no matter what your age? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a nutritional supplement I recommend and use that's clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function. eliminate harmful pathogens and fight infection, and cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. It's Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. With Sovereign's proprietary enhanced delivery system, Colostrum LD is the most effective colostrum available. Colostrum LD has wide-ranging health benefits at every stage of life. To order, just go to SovereignLaboratories.com. That's SovereignLaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to SovereignLaboratories.com for Colostrum LD.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. So now back to Layla with questions from our listening audience.
So we've got an interesting email from John. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what is your take on the connection between erectile dysfunction drugs like Viagra, Cialis, and melanoma?
Okay. And so you did a little deep dive on that subject.
He sent us a link to the Harvard.
There's an association.
There's an association.
Now, association is not necessarily causation.
Right.
Right.
And that's really the bottom line of this.
So what I would speculate is that men who want to get it going in the sack like to spend a lot of time cruising the beach in their spandex, you know, trying to pick up ladies or members of the same sex. I mean, we're not going to discriminate there.
Sure. Yeah.
And maybe that's the association.
Right. So even a Harvard Health blog.
Because if you've given up on having sex, you might as well just stay home and sit inside.
Exactly.
Right.
You don't need to get that nice bronze skin tone out there on the beach.
I'm just saying, you know, that could be the basis of the, you know, of the association. But what do they say in the article?
Well, they say that the raw numbers suggest that the risk for melanoma associated Viagra is small.
How small?
It needs to be weighed in considering if this study is of any significance at all. It's even smaller than what was reported in the study because not all of the 14 cancers in the Viagra group can be attributed to the drug. So it's more about, should you worry is really the question, mm-hmm. right? And apparently, according to at least Harvard Health, their blog says that you probably can't, because it's, as you said, Dr. Hoffman, it's not causation, it's association. And the most dangerous form of skin cancer is what they found associated with melanoma over a period of 10 years. The finding makes for an attention-grabbing headline, but it's also what would be called a true lie, a scientifically correct statement that could easily be misunderstood to mean that little blue pill gives you deadly skin cancer. Okay, here are the two things that we need to know according to Harvard Health. The study does not show that Viagra causes skin cancer. Instead, it shows that a large group of men, those who said they used Viagra, ended up being diagnosed more often with melanoma than those who didn't use the drug. The study shows a connection, not a cause. And number two, if Viagra does promote melanoma, the absolute increase is small. So, it's a provocative study, say the researchers. Of course, it warrants more careful replication. Several factors need to be considered, but the devil is really in the details. While the study may be interesting, it may be an attention-grabbing headline, it does not mean that men should be worried yet that Viagra causes melanoma. So, that's really that. So, John, that is interesting that association is found.
What they're saying here, mm-hmm. you may have heard me typing, mm-hmm. you know, which I apologize. It says here, the mechanism by which sildenafil acts is to relax smooth muscle through the increase of blood flow.
Sildenafil is Viagra.
Viagra. Mm-hmm. It's possible that this accelerates melanoma by increasing blood flow to the cancerous cells.
That's interesting. This is the JAMA 2014 study. This is the study that was actually
cited. That's what they're referring to. Yeah. You know, and they're commenting on it. It is also possible that There's a, you know, when you take a lot of Viagra, there's a bit of a free radical acquisition from that.
Okay.
Because it kind of drives the production of nitric oxide, which generates some free radicals.
So, that's interesting. That's actually interesting. Another thing about this study is, you know, men filled out health and lifestyle questionnaires every 2 years, and the questionnaire started asking men about use of erectile dysfunction drugs in 2000. In that year, 1,618 men reported having ever used it. A lot of men are not going to say whether they use this. It's like the ad on the subway I've been seeing, you know, yes, these ED pills really do work, but yes, we understand you were asking for your friend.
Right.
Not for yourself.
Right.
So there could be some questionnaires,
some recollection bias,
yes,
or you
recollection
know, that kind of
bias.
Thing.
Right.
Okay.
So,
right. Well, we pick apart these studies and sometimes.
John, thank you for that thoughtful question. Ah, this is a good one.
Wait, we need to pause because
you're kidding.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Two?
Yeah.
Wow.
So just to pace ourselves, we divide these podcasts into two parts. So in part two, what are we going to tackle?
How do I help raise my glutathione, and what test can show me that?
Okay. We'll tackle that question in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin. Together we do our weekly Q&A with Layla. And you can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Thanks for listening. Please listen to part two coming up. This is Intelligent Medicine.